when the religious Zionists started thinking about coming back to Eretz Israel, right? 1850s and 1860s. So, why are we religious Jews coming to Eretz Israel? Because we want to build a Beit Hamikdash. So we want to build a Beit Hamikdash. Let's assume we've succeeded. So we're all living in Eretz Israel. We built the Beit Hamikdash. Can we now fulfill our dreams and aspirations to do the Avodah the Beit Hamikdash? Not so fast. We need the big day Kehunah in order to do the Avodah the Beit Hamikdash. And in order to have the big day Kehunah, we need, of course, Techeva. So now what do you do? Is all of the Zionist enterprises, all of Shivat Zion, is all of the hopes of coming back to Israel for naught? That's the problem. So the first to deal with this was a Tiferet Yisrael. So Lifshitz lived when? We're talking about the 1850s, 1840s, 1850s. So he wrote a sefer, a little pamphlet that you can find before Seder Moed, Kupat Arochu. And in Kupat Arochim, which deals with a lot of things, one of the things it deals with is the Day Tuna. So the Tiferet Yisrael writes, very interesting, and I think that the Tiferet Yisrael had a lot of influence on the two later Rabbanim, great Gedolim, to deal with the issue of Techeva, Gershon HaNechlein and the Radin Rebbe, and Rav Herzog, the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel. But I think that you take these three together, and that really is the strongest foundation of unbelievable Gedolim who dealt with the really practical issues of bringing back the Chilat. They were all concerned with how we could possibly bring back the Chilat, how we could find the Chilat zone. And it's extremely important to understand what they cared about, what their criteria were for bringing back the Chilat and finding the Chilat zone, and also probably as important, what they didn't care about. A lot of the things today that people seem to care about were not necessarily issues that that they had. So what is the... What does the Tiferet Yisrael say? Omnam, Ba'aruch Erech Chilazon, Ashlishi Eviyah, Midrash, Vahim Shalach, Shalach Chilazon, Hu Birya Sheyesh Lo Nartik Al Gabat. Right, the Gemara says, Nartiko Gadel Imo, it's this kind of a sea creature, and it's got a shell on its back. Sound familiar? Yes, it is. What kind of a sea creature has a shell on its back? Im Kein Hu Mush'al, or a mussel. Uche'en ze katav, says the Tiferet Yisrael, katav Gezenius. Now Gezenius lived around the time of the Tiferet Yisrael. He was a Dutch Hebraist who wrote a translation, or actually a thesaurus, a dictionary of biblical Hebrew. A Christian living in Holland, German, Dutch, who was an unbelievable scholar of Hebrew and Semitic languages, and he wrote a dictionary of the words in the Tanakh, and he of course writes, what does Tchelet mean? So Gezenius there writes that it's a, says the Tiferet Yisrael who read Gezenius, Sha'tchelet na'ase midam muscle, mushal muscle, hanikreit purpurishne, which in German means a purple snail, the purple snail. Vitzovin midamo, purple blue, I'll translate it from the Yiddish here. It's open midamo, purple blue, and says Gezenius, he's still quoting Gezenius. You can die from its blood, this bluish purple, note with violet, says it Tiferet Yisrael, quoting again Gezenius. The Katav Od, Shenitza, Biyama Insa'i, it's found, according to Gezenius, in the Mediterranean, Yama Insa'i, the Aklipa Shigdela Al Habiryahi. Okay, and it's got a shell on it. Says Gezenius, the shell's color is also blue. Okay, this is what Gezenius felt in the 1800s. Now, since the first row, he named Gam the Masha Katav, Shinimtek Biyamagadol, he emet. Kache Bil Chaza. And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbat that the Chilazon is found in Suvamot, Chefa Ve'atzur. He says again, Gezenius is correct when he says this snail is found in the Mediterranean. What Gezenius wrote, Shevidama Chometzovim, purple blue, that you get a purple bluish color The Hainu Dunkel Blue, I don't know what that means exactly. But Zeh Lo Nishmala. In this, we can't listen to Gezenis. The Al Karchach Zeh Shevo Ki Kabbalatenu. This is not according to our tradition. Zehare Chazal Amru, Techelet Domele Rakia. Because Chazal wrote that Techelet looks like the sky, the color of the sky. Bechach Katav HaRambam. That's the Rambam that we quoted before. He says, Shetzivokitar Harakia Neged Zrichat HaShemesh. He says, this is Himmel wood, right? Sky wood. That snail that Gezenius is telling us about, acherhu, and that's not the Tchelet Chilazon. So first of all, what do you see from what the Torah so quotes from Gezenius? He doesn't have any problem with it being a snail. In fact, he thinks it is a snail. It's just not this particular snail that Gezenius quoted, right? Because that snail, the main problem that he has with it, really only one problem. Gives a purple blue, it doesn't give a sky blue dye. Strangely enough, the Tverisrael now goes on to say that actually you don't even need a chilazon. The only thing you need is a tseva, a color, which is sky blue, and the other criteria is that it has to be fast. It has to be something that doesn't fade or wash away. Okay, that we know from Mara, and also from the Rambam, she'omedet b'yofya, the Gemara, that it stays steadfast in its beauty. The Gemara talks about lo ifrit chazute, it doesn't change, its color doesn't change. Okay, that's Gezenius. The Tver Yisrael argued vehemently, the Radziner Rebbe came and argued vehemently with the Tver Yisrael on one thing, that you don't need a chilazon. Okay? Radziner Rebbe came along and said, it's absolutely clear from the Gemara, from the Tosefta, Tchelet min achilazon kasher, shelo min achilazon pasul, you need achilazon. But he, although he doesn't quote Gezenius, the only, as far as I know, the only modern secular scholar that the Radziner ever quotes Aristotle. But the only modern scholar, as far as I know, that the Radziner ever quotes is Darwin, actually. He's talking about, the Radziner thought that it could be that the chilazon wouldn't be a snail, but rather it was a type of a squid. And he quotes the Milos, the great merits and wonders of this beautiful little creature, the cuttlefish. And he even said that a great traveler who went around the world, the British explorer Darwin, also spoke about it. So it seems to be read Darwin's books. But anyway, the Radziner doesn't accept the Tver Yisrael. When did the Radziner live? He made his famous trip from Poland to Italy in about 1888. And the Radziner does, however, accept the other two, and now he makes it three issues that were important as far as the first also. Now, you could argue that the reason that the Radziner spent his life basically looking for Tchelet without a guilt, because imagine the Radziner learning the Tversal says, okay, we don't need a chilazon. We don't know what the chilazon is, but that's okay, because all we need is somebody to get into the laboratory and find a good color, synthetic color that's sky blue and nice and steadfast, and that's fine. And he basically answered, if not practically, he hadn't found that color, of course, he wasn't a chemist, but at least theoretically, he had paved the way for Mashiach to come again, because here you could have Tchelet reintroduced as soon as somebody sat in the lab and made that color. Comes along the Radziner and says, no way, you need the chilazon. So then, I imagine he was excited about that, but then he probably went to sleep that night and said, well, now what am I doing? Now I've just basically destroyed all hope for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, Big Day Kirunah. So, given the fact that the Radziner felt that you needed a chilazon, and I think that it's pretty conclusive from the Gemara that he's correct in that, he had only one option left, and that was to go and find the Jews. And that's what he did. In 1887, he wrote a book, Tzfune Tzfune Chol, describing what it is he was looking for. 1888, 1889, he spent a year more or less in Italy, and in Naples looking for the Chilazon. He decided it was cuttlefish, and that's not so important. But what is important is to know what is important to the Rav Zinner in terms of determining what a kosher chilazon would be. That's a funny phrase, but a kosher chilazon for tchela, what would that be? We actually, when we were collecting snails in Jerez, which is on the southern coast of Spain, we used to have the Rav from Gibraltar hop down every couple of days to take a look at the people who were collecting the snails for us as a mashkiach, let's say the nechmas. So we're probably the only people ever to have a shkacha on snails. Amen. So, writes the Rav Zinner in Tzfune Tzfune Chol, a very, very critical line. Im achar achipus, if after my search, or our search, nasig yadenu v'tzod dam, eize min chilazon sheyie. Okay, so, nasig yadenu v'tzod dam, eize min chilazon sheyie. Any chilazon, and he's very wide in his definition of chilazon, probably any creature that lives in the sea, shenuchal itzboa bo tzeva hatchelet, which will give us the correct color of tchelet, which is tzeva, which is the color of tchelet, is the color of the sky. Tzeva omedet biofya v'lo tishtaneh, a fast and lasting dye that doesn't fade or change. Vaday yachol lekayeh mitzvah tchelet b'lo shum safek. Three criteria that the Rav Zinner says. What are they? One, chilazon. It's got to come from some creature. I don't know what that chilazon is. Some creature, but whatever, doesn't matter almost. Two, it gives you the color of the sky, a color, a dye that has the color of the sky blue. And three, that it's a fast, strong dye. And if those three criteria are met, vaday. Now listen to this, very strange. And I want to know why. How do you prove that logically? Vaday yachol lekayem mitzvah tchelet b'lo shum safek. I have to understand, where's the logic here? Where does that come from? And just to jump one more time, let's say another generation ahead, Rav Herzog, who did his doctorate in 1914 on the issue of tchelet, basically writes the same thing. Muvan me'elav, this is Rav Herzog speaking. Muvan me'elav ki achipus achar achilazon shel tchelet zakuku b'mida meruba lehagdarat mar'eh hatchelet. He's saying, looking for the tchelet, looking for the source, the snail, we have to very much keep in mind what color it is that we're looking for. That will help us find the snail. Chilazon, now listen to what he says. Chilazon shemotzi tzeba, shemar'ehu mar'eh hatchelet, harei zeu achilazon she'anu mevakshim. If we find a chilazon that gives us the right color, that is therefore the right chilazon. Okay, now, let's follow the logic here. This is, I know it's late at night, follow with me. Why does that have to be? Why is this compelling logic? That if you find a chilazon that gives you the right color, and let's say it's a good lasting color along with it, that has to be kasher for tchelet. The answer is because the Gemara told you what's not okay for tchelet. There was a fraudulent tchelet the Gemara talks about called kala ila. That was indigo, came from a plant, a couple of plants give you indigo, European plants that come from China and India, gives you indigo, which is the color of the sky, which is the color of tchelet. And that means that you could fake tchelet by using indigo very, very adamant that you shouldn't use this fraudulent tchelet. You should only use real tchelet that comes from the snake. So instead, both the Rav Zinner and Rehertzog. Well, there you go. If there was another chilazon that was around in the time of Chazal that gave you a blue, sky blue color that you could, by simple chemical tests, determine that it faded. So there's no way you could tell the difference between this chilazon and real chilazon. And it comes from a snail, but hypothetically it's the wrong snail and it's not kosher. Well, the Gemara then would have had to argue that that's a problem. You have to be worried about that. Chazal never say that. Chazal only say that you have to be worried about the plant fake chayv, not about some other chilazon, some other snail that would give you a different kind of unkosher chayv. So, therefore, only two things. Either it's kosher, or Chazal never knew of any other chilazon that could potentially give you a blue, steadfast color. We okay with that? Because this is the crux of my argument. If I can find and prove to you, to that, to the audience, that there is a snail that exists that Chazal knew about that could give a sky blue color and that lasts for a very, very long time, according to the Tiferet Israel, according to the Radziner, and according to Rav Herzog, that would have to be kosher for Tchid. Could be there were others, could be there were many snails, but at least the minimum is to say that that would have to be. And that's what I'd like to talk to you tonight about, the recent archaeological finds that I think do prove those theories.
Are there any Rishonim that give the same type of description, you know, to the Tiferet Israel? Like, are there, like, forgive me, I'm not so familiar with the Tiferet Israel, but like post-scheme, like are known as post-scheme, same kind of argument?
No, most of the post-scheme didn't deal with the idea of potentially ever finding a chilazon. That was not something. The Rambam writes about it as if it existed. Now, even though most probably the Rambam, almost definitely the Rambam absolutely know about it firsthand, but he does say a few things. He says it comes from a chilazon. The chilazon is found in the Yam HaMelech, which is the Mediterranean, and that chilazon gives you a sky blue color, which is omitted the Ophia says the Rambam. He doesn't give you any more indications about anything, how you can find it.
But he's qualifying where it has to come from, for example. Meaning, the crux of what we're saying, that any type of chilazon snail that will give us this color and stands fast, at least right there, the Rambam is qualifying, and needs to come from that particular area, i.e. the Yam HaMelech, meaning. If I find snails on the California coast, and I give you the same diet.
Well, is the Rambam saying that that's a halachic criterion, or is he saying that that's where they are?
It's at least a question, though.
Either way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't the Rambam also say that the Yam is black?
Yeah, very, very strange. The Rambam actually uses the word nil.
It's
shachor pidyo, right? Also using the word nil, and also using the word, you know, like. Exactly in the middle of the day. But the fact is, damo shachor, you have to be very careful when you're talking in medieval times about the descriptions of color. We're talking about medieval times and ancient times. The description of color is not always what we understand. Shachor almost definitely meant dark, not black as we know it. Homer calls the sea wine red. It's very strange. The Greeks almost never used the word blue, which has led actually people to actually posit that all Greeks were blind to the color blue. But there were people that actually said that. But I don't know if that's true, maybe. But I think that it really has much more to do with our trying to take our understanding of the words that we use for color and putting them back on what medieval and ancient people said. But okay, but even if we assume and could that damo, that this whatever comes out of the snail should be very, very dark color. That's also fine. But now the question always is, are these descriptions, are they guesses? Are they or are they halachic criteria that if it's not that, we have to say that this is not an okay? Now, again, I think that the three who I'm quoting here, and I think that these are really the three most, you know, the ones who really devoted time and effort, especially the Radziner and Herzog, to really try to bring back this tchelet. And what they're saying is what we care about is coming from a sea creature. It's got to have a sky blue color, and it's got to be fast. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a few finds that we had. Let's go to the first one. Which is, did you find it? They show you a picture of a snail. Let's see if this is it. Okay, doesn't matter. I'll pass it. Let me pass around a
couple of these slides.
Look at the snail for a second. The snail is a Murex trunculus snail. Pass it around. We'll look at the other picture in a second. The snail that we're looking at is a Murex trunculus snail. What makes it so interesting, other than getting pass this around, I have a couple more. What makes this snail so interesting is it's 2,000 years old. It's found on the dig in Hartsiel by Professor Shimon Gibson, who's the head archaeologist on the dig. It was found in the area that is believed to be residential area of Kohanim in the first century, at the time of the end of the second time of Hikdash, right? Somewhere between the year 0 and the year 70, more or less. And that is a Murex trunculus snail. Now, what is a Murex trunculus snail doing in Yerushalayim? This snail lives in the Mediterranean. What is that snail doing in Yerushalayim? The house is of a Kohen. This is a question that Professor Gibson asked me, and he didn't have an answer. We started talking about it, and together we came up with an idea, which is complete conjecture, but it could be the answer. And that is that the people who dealt with the Cheder were probably the Kohanim. Why? Because the greatest consumer of Cheder was the Beit HaMikdash. And so, you know, the Beit HaKehunah, the Kohen Gadol wore a lot of Tchelet, the Kohen Chedyot wore an Avnei Tchelet. So you had a lot of Tchelet, and all the, there were a lot of things in the Beit HaMikdash, you needed Tchelet, all the protocols, and the coverings, and the Kehilim, and a lot of other things. So you got a lot of Tchelet that's needed for the Beit HaMikdash. If you were a Tchelet merchant, you would, you know, you would probably be a Kohen or somehow associated with the Beit HaMikdash. You would go down to the sea, bring back the Tchelet from the dyers on the coast, and bring it back to the Beit HaMikdash, and along the way, you would also probably want to sell it to anybody who wanted to sell it for their pizzas, right? Okay. So, assuming that was the case, somebody who dealt in Tchelet might be asked or challenged, how do I know that your Tchelet is real? Real Tchelet. How do I know that it's not Kalayilan? How do I know that it's not fake in some way? So the best way to advertise that you have real, authentic Tchelet that came from a snail would be to take a little snail with you when you went to the coast, and the dyers would give it to you, and you would put it outside your shop, I don't know, like a barbershop hole, tchelet cellar, or maybe on like a little plumba to give a hashkacha on your tchelet, you know, or maybe even for advertising. But the point is, the people who dealt with tchelet would have dealt with this and would have probably known what the snail was. And I deal with tchelet, I have lots of snails in my house. So that's just the way it is. You become quite attached to these little snails. So, conjecture or no, one thing that this proves absolutely conclusively is that in the time of Chazal, the time of Hillel and Shammai, first century, and the times of the Mishnah and the Tanaim, there were Murex trunculus snails that Chazal had to know about. Okay, they're all over. There's not one. There were many tens of these snails that were found in Yerushalayim in this period. So I think that that's something that's fairly conclusive. The next thing, you could keep it, because the next thing I want to talk about is the find that was reported in the New York Times last week by Professor Spikora. So this piece of fabric, the second picture there, was found actually by Yigal Yadin in the 1960s in his excavations in the site. This particular fabric was found close to the room of the scrolls. Doesn't say much, we don't know much about this fabric. We don't know what it belonged to, who wore it. But the little embroidered dark blue patch on it was analyzed by Professor Koren, and it showed the presence not only of indigo, but of indigo could come either from a snail or a plant. Monobromo indigo, dibromo indigo, which are two other molecules, are only found in snails, not in plant indigo. Their presence in the analysis of this piece of embroidery proves absolutely and conclusively that that little blue patch there comes from a Murex trunculus scale. Okay. So now we've got a little bit more of the puzzle coming in. This piece of dark blue, admittedly, it's not necessarily the trailer the way we would imagine it, but this piece of dark blue was around somewhere from the year minus 100 to plus 100 Masada, somewhere in those 200 years, Herodium to the time of Churban, and even a little bit later to the time of Bar Kokhba. So you've got a piece here that's 2,000 years old. I think we would all be happy to look that good after 2,000 years. If anybody wanted to know the definition of Omedes de Ophion, I don't think you could get any picture that could represent it better than that beautiful, absolutely magnificent color that shines out after 2,000 years of being swept around the sandy top of the sun.
When was this sample of cloth analyzed?
A couple weeks ago. You want to know how? I love talking about it. It's HPLC, high performance liquid chromatography.
All right.
And it showed peaks at indigo, peaks at dibromo indigo, peaks at monobromo indigo. And, you know, Svi Koren will be coming out with a full paper on it. It's absolutely 100% conclusive that it had to come from the snail. The proportions of monobromo indigo to dibromo indigo, monobromo to indigo, are exactly the same as it found in Europe's trunk of the snail today off the coast of Israel. So there's not really any way, at least that I know of, that you could get out of that.
Why was it only analyzed recently?
Sitting in somebody's drawer somewhere. Great. And there's probably tons more stuff that you guys haven't found that you haven't analyzed yet.
Do you have any idea what the cloth that it was taken from looked like?
That's all there is.
The mono and the dibromo indigo only found in the Murex trunculus snail. They've looked at the dye from lots of different snails, and none of them have had that.
Well, it's a great question. It's a great question, and I have to say that I was always of the opinion till last week that all Murex snails, Murex is a family. The Muricidae. There's about 1,000 species, right? Mollusk, gastropod, Muricidae. And of that, the species that we're looking at is Murex trunculus, although there are a couple of different species that would give you a dive in the Mediterranean, three different snails actually, that you can find in the Mediterranean that would give you a dive. Murex trunculus is the one that we're talking about. Theasemastoma is another one, and Murex brandaris is another one. These two usually give you a very dark purple blue, and this gives you, almost a reddish purple, and this gives you a purple blue, right? Now, I didn't go into it. There's so much more to talk about. I urge you to go onto our website, tekhelet.com, and if anybody's listening, all of these pictures can be found on my website, where I have the articles that I've written on, and these pictures are all there. It's baruchsterman.com, baruchsterman.com. You can look at and find all these pictures in a lot of other articles. It's instructive to look at the science of Tekhelet, the articles there, how Tekhelet can actually turn blue if you expose it to the sun at the right time. I'm not even going to go into that. Because I'm going to show you that what we know today, which is a big chiddush for us, because we just learned it maybe 20, 30 years ago, people knew 2,500 years ago. I think I'll show that in a second. But in any event, there are other snails, and we were always of the opinion that all you got to do is take any of these snails, expose them to sunlight during a certain time in the dye process, and you would get sky blue. It ends up that this has a little bit of a different chemistry, and you'll find monobromo indigo in the Murex trunculus snail, but you won't find it in these snails. I just found that out last week. Svi Koren made that assertion. I guess we have to do a little bit more research to see if it's completely accurate and if it's true statistically. But anyway, it's almost irrelevant. Either monobromo indigo or dibromo indigo proves that it came from a snail.
So the answer is that the only snail that produces a color that could possibly be phthalate is Murex fungus that has the dibromo.
No. Any of the muricidae, yeah, when exposed to sunlight, can be used to give you a sky blue color. And that the only these three are found in the Mediterranean. You know, you can do you can use Purpura lapillus, which is along the coasts of Britain, and they did in ancient times use that. In Mexico, they use snails like this, but they kind of tweak out the dye while the snail is still alive. They call it milking snails. I mean, so all over the world, people had used these snails. But in the ancient times, the Tchelet, the Tanakh knows that, the Tchelet Me'iye Elisha, right? The Tchelet of Tzor, the Tchelet that Hiram sends the Ben Ishdan that was married to the Tzori woman, right? That he sends to Shlomo HaMelech to work in Tchelet and Argaman. Those were done from these snails. Probably the Murex trunculus, but maybe also the Brindaris, although that was probably a more purple color. Let me just get to one more archaeological find, and then I'll really open up the questions. This is an absolutely fascinating discovery. It's a saddle claw. Okay, so it's Okay, so it's a saddle claw that was found in the Altai Mountains, just on the border of Russia, China, Mongolia, and Kazakhstan. Four-way border, yeah. So this was found buried in the tomb of a prince that belonged to the Scythian tribe. It's dated to about 2,500 years ago, 500 BC. What was going on in the world of Tanakh, 500 BC? It's around the time of Churban Bayit Rishon, somewhere between the time of Churban Bayit Rishon and Shivat Zion and the time of Zerubbabel and Ezra Nehemiah, somewhere around. The pattern is Babylonian. And the analysis of this shows that it came from Murex from the Mediterranean. And as you can see, in the middle, you're looking at a purplish color. But if you can see very closely along the edges, there's a sky blue color. Right? Everybody notice it? Am I right? Along the edges, there's remnants of a sky blue color, 2,500 years old, that is analyzed as coming from the Murex. How much time do we have? You want to hear the story of how that got there? How did a saddle cloth dyed with snails that has a Babylonian pattern end up in the middle of Russia, in Siberia, buried in the tomb of the Scythian tomb? I have no idea. But I have a thought, which may answer. Okay, who are these Scythians? Probably when the Tanakh talks about Ashkenaz, it means the Scythians. Shkuzi, they were four in Syria. They came from Ashur, broke off from Ashur around 800 BC. And they went kind of northeast into the area of northern Syria, northern Turkey even. That's where they lived on the steppes of Central Asia. They hated the Assyrians. They hated Ashur because they came from Ashur. And so, when Nebuchadnezzar's father, Nebuchadnezzar, fought against the Assyrians, they came and joined him. The big fight against the Assyrians was the Battle of Carchemish, where, on the one hand, you had the Ashur, the Assyrians, and Paro Necho from Egypt, who were fighting against this new break-off tribe of these people from Babel, who, you know, they shouldn't have been there. They were upstarts. And the Skuzu, the Scythians came and joined them. Okay, the Paro Necho was on his way up to the Battle of Carchemish when Yoshiyahu, siding with the Babliim, siding with Babel, decided to delay Paro Necho, stop him from traveling to join the forces of the king of Ashur. And essentially, because Yoshiyahu held him up, the Rav Pasar was able to fight against first Ashur and defeat them, and then when Egypt finally made it up, defeated them. Scythians and Babylon fighting against Ashur, destroyed Nineveh, destroyed the Assyrians, and there was for a while a pact between Israel and Babel and the Nebuchadnezzar, which unfortunately didn't last very long, and ultimately the Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem, burnt all of burnt of course the Beit HaMikdash, and took all of the leaders of the Jews and brought them out to Galut. So there's an interesting sentence at the end of Divrei Yamin that probably the last parak. It is the last parak of Tanakh. It is the. Let me see if I can find it. Vayal alihem et melech kastim, vayarog bachurehem bacherem, v'leit mitasham, v'lo chamal, al bachur, v'tuva, zaten v'yashesh hakol, matan v'yado. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed everyone, killed everyone, he didn't leave any remnants. V'chol klei beit ha'elohim, v'agdolim v'haktanim, and all of the vessels, the kelim of the beit ha'elohim, of the beit ha'mikdash, Ve'otzarot Beit Hashem ve'otzarot Hamelech, and all the treasures of the Beit HaMikdash and of the Beit HaMelech and of the king's palace, Visarav, and of his attendants and his princes, Hakol Hevi Bavel. Nebuchadnezzar took all of these spoils from the Beit HaMikdash and from the Beit HaMelech, and he brought it back to Babel. Now, that's what we have recorded in the Tanakh. A parallel to that is found. Cuneiform can be found in a book called Cuneiform Parallels to the Old Testament. This is from the Assyrian, from the Babylonian annals, Babylonian records. Colored garments, linen stuff, blue and purple stuff, said in Babylonian, that's kitu subatu tankiltu subatu agamanu. Okay, the wool of Takiltu, of Techelet, and Argamanu, of Argamanu. Usha wood, Ukarina wood, everything costly from the royal treasury. So, the parallel of our pasuk that we have recorded in Divrei Hayamim, as recorded by the Babylonian, just gives a little bit more detail. What was it that Nebuchadnezzar brought back from the Beit HaMikdash and the Otsar Beit HaMelech? Techelet and Argamanu. Along with some other things. So, my idea basically is that when Nebuchadnezzar came back triumphant from destroying the Beit HaMikdash with his friend, the Scythian prince, who fought alongside him in Nineveh and in Carchemish and eventually in Jerusalem. And when it was time to go, Nebuchadnezzar decided that he was going to give this prince a present. And so he took the tchelet from the Beit HaMikdash, turned it into a saddle cloth, Babylonian textile, Babylonian pattern, gave it to his friend, the king, the prince, who took it back to Pazaric, in the Altai Mountains, where he eventually dropped dead, and was buried. When he was buried, and his coffin was sealed, the climate of Pazaric area took a turn for the colder, and the ground turned to permafrost. So, what was buried with this Scythian prince was sealed and frozen for 2,500 years. When Rudenko, the Russian archaeologist, finally dug out these Kurgan, these burial mounds, he found the prince with his tattooed skin still intact. And the oldest known fabric, certainly dye fabric with any kind of purple or wool that was ever found, things like that don't stay 2,500 years without a little bit of preservation. But basically, I would like to believe that this, the oldest fabric ever found, happens to be the trailer that was brought back from Vietnam. That's conjecture. The fact remains, and this is the important fact, and I want to put all everything together. 2,500 years ago, already in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, it's clear that they knew, with murex shells, how to dye light blue, the color of the sky, which is what we've always had our tradition in. 2,000 years later, this piece of wool still retains its luster and beauty. So that's on the field, yeah. This proves that it's the color of Tchelet. The Hartzion snail proves that they knew what the snails were in the times of the Beit HaMikdash and in the times of Chazal. So now let's see if we've done enough to prove at least one thing, which is that the Chilazon that we have here, the Murex Trunculus, is a kosher snail for Tchelet. Three criteria. Does it live in the sea? Yes, it does. Does it give you a color that is the color of Tchelet, that is the color of the sky? Yes, it does. Not only does it today, of course I know how to do it today. You could argue, well, maybe you know how to do it today, but they didn't know how to do it back then. They didn't know how to do it back then, and I have proof. So it does give the color of the sky, which is second. Is it omitted, Biofia? I would say so. So now we've got these three criteria which are fulfilled, according, I believe, to the Tiferet Yisrael and the Rebbe, and the Rav Herzog. The Murex Trunculus snail is authentic to Tchelet, or at least it is Tchelet that's kasher for tzitzit. That's as far as I can go. Now, you could argue, and this has nothing to do with fact, or it just has to do with halacha. You could argue that even if it is real Tchelet, you shouldn't wear it today. And this is something that I hope that you'll go back and ask your rabbi. Because there is an opinion, certainly that's the opinion of Rav Lichtenstein, for example, who will say to you, absolutely, this Tchelet is real Tchelet, and it's what Rabbi Akiva wore, and it's what Moshe Rabbeinu wore, absolutely. But we don't wear it today. The reason we don't wear it today is it's not part of our tradition, there's no, without Masoret, you can't reintroduce Halacha. Fine, that's a completely different question, and I don't have any way of dealing with that question or answering it, it's a question of Halacha. But, at least the argument that people make, which is, I think, an argument that can no longer be justified in any logical way, is that this is not real or authentic or kosher. I think with that, over the last few years, these finds that have come up have at least put to rest that particular argument. So that is are the ideas that I wanted to report. I hope that you'll take them with you and know them and understand them. Do with them what you will. And is there any questions?
Have you done the Gemara's chemical test?
Yes. That's an interesting problem. The Gemara talks about a chemical test where first you have to dip. This is a chemical test to tell the difference between Tchelet and Kaleiyot. So the Gemara says first you dip it in urine of a 40-day-old child. And then you bake it in a pastry made with barley. And if it changes color or fades, you know it's not real tchelet. Okay, so we've done these tests. I don't know. We actually did take the urine from 40 days. So whether we did the barley baking correctly, I'm not sure. But we did these tests as best as we understood them. The tchelet didn't fade, but neither did the indigo. So now, what you could do with that is this. Either the Gemara's tests are not accurate, or we're not doing them correctly. It could be that this is one day on the Gemara. There is a day on the Gemara that tchelet ain't labedika. There's no way to test it. So, not quite sure whether we really expected the tests to work on Kalei Ilan or not. But it could be that Kalei Ilan is dyed differently today than it was in the old days. It's stronger, more steadfast. I don't know. It could be. But one thing is at least true. It is a test, and we passed it. The tchelet did pass the test. So at least on that level, I can say yes, we did this.
Did you do any tests to exclude the cuttlefish or has this
fascinating story. I certainly didn't do any tests, but Rav Herzog did. Rav Herzog asked the dyers of Radzin for their... Rav Gershon Hanof wasn't alive. Rav Gershon Hanof died in 1891, just shy of his 13th year as Rebbe. That was a very important year. To be 13 years as a Rebbe was a very important in Psishcha. Gershon Hanof never made it to that. Gershon Hanof had a son. That son had a son, Shlaima, who was killed by the Nazis when he took a stand and joined the partisans. Fascinating story there, it's interesting. In any event, by the time Rav Herzog did his tests, Gershon Hanof was no longer alive. So he asked the masters of the diet masters from Radzin if they could send a sample of his of their tchelet. He got that from them. He sent it off to a couple of different tests at laboratories in Germany, France, and England. All came back with the astounding news that the dye was inorganic. It didn't come from any living organism, which Herzog couldn't understand. How could it be that Radziner is telling you it comes from the squid and tests are telling you that it's inorganic? It's a complicated answer, but the bottom line is that the color blue that the Rebbe from Radzin found is due to the additives, the chemical additives that he put into the dye, which form an iron crystal, and that's what gave it the color. It's called Prussian blue. It was discovered in 1704. And either the Radziner stumbled upon this discovery, or what Rav Herzog claims is that maybe when he went to look for chemists to help him turn the black squid ink into blue tchelet, they either, you know, knowingly, unknowingly, maliciously, or just for whatever reason, showed him the process of using Prussian blue, adding a little bit of iron and some other things, and that's what gave it color. Rav Herzog said, it can't be that the Gemara and Chazal are so makbid that it comes from a chilazon when the chilazon doesn't play any function really. And you could do the same thing using any kind of carbon-based substrate, like oxchlor or anything like that.
So
yeah.
They can't reproduce the color from the cuttlefish.
Can you what?
They can't get that color out of the
cuttlefish. No. The sepia ink is black. Right, sepia ink is a dark brownish black color. To turn that into blue was something that needed the Rosh Rebbe or some chemist. And that's but that seems to be, at least according to the Herzog, I think that's fairly conclusive that it couldn't have been real. There's never any archaeological evidence for either anything dyed with cuttlefish, blue, of course not, with Prussian blue, was never discovered until 1704, or any kind of archaeological evidence that they used sepia and cuttlefish for dyeing in the industry. Like there is, of course, with tchelet, you have mounds of tons and tons of broken chilzonot all along the northern coast, from down as far as Yavne. Just in the recent excavations at Yavne, have also found a dye installation down, and all the way up through northern Syria.
Yeah, just to clarify. Is Rabbi Herzog talking about the same tellus which were produced in the Tara of Radziner Rebbe? Is it the same tellus or the different process?
No. Rabbi Herzog never was able to make tellus. He knew about the murex truncus snail, and he says, I can't say that this is the real snail, although evidence proves that it is. But I can't accept that this was real chelet because it doesn't give a blue color. It gives a purple-blue color, very much affected, I believe, by the third strong and Gesenius, according to that. But the Radzina would have found the same thing. The method and the process for getting blue, meaning putting it in the sun, was only found about 35 years ago by Professor Otto Elsner, after Herzog died. We just had Herzog's 50th birthday. Herzog never knew about the ability to turn this blue, if he would have. And he basically said, and I have a good quote somewhere from him, where he said, all of the evidence points towards the Murex trunculus, but what can I do? It doesn't give the right color.
The snail of Gesenius, the Murex trunculus?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting thing, and if anybody can do some research, I would really appreciate it. If you can find the first edition of Gesenius, I'd like to see what he said. I've seen that he's been quoted as saying that it's a Murex. In all of the editions that I have, but only from the second and third on, Gesenius talks about Helix Ianthina, which is a different kind of snail. However, a lot of Gesenius's work relies on an earlier Christian Hebrew scholar named Johannes Braun, who was German, lived in 1628 to 1728. Now, Johannes Braun also wrote a dictionary of Tanakh, and there he writes in Latin. Now, who do you think he translated the Latin for me? Of course, right? And there he does actually use the Murex. He talks about the Murex. So, I've heard that Gesenius actually uses Murex in his first edition. I never saw it myself. But he does clearly say, snail, purpurishnek, the purple snail that was used for, in the olden times, to dye purple and so on. So, he's clearly talking about these snails, if not this particular species, or wouldn't have known anything else. Where he knew it from and how he kept that tradition when the rest of the world seems to not have known about it. Okay, so thank you. Oh, wait, hold on.
If the shells are found all over the stuff, so there, it seems like it's a pretty commonly used snail. So why would Chazal give such strange hadaras of what the philosophy is? It's so common.
Okay, so what does Chazal say? There's no septa, right? Or brighta. Chayot ze gufo dome liyam. Okay? Looks like the sea. Ubriyato dome ledag. Ola achat mishivim shana. Okay? Ubriyato dome ledag. All of these are very cryptic. Okay? Gufo dome liyam. What does the yam look like? Okay? What do we have there? Briyato dome ledag. What does briyato mean? Does that mean that it looks like a fish? Does it mean that it has eggs? I don't even know what that is. And then you have Ola achat mishivim shana, which, as Rav Herzog says, there is nothing in the world that's older than Ha'am Kishim Shana. So what does that mean? There's even a gear side that says that we look at. The Rambam does not quote that line when he quotes this Bryce. Instead, he says, Uviyama Melech Umatsu. It could mean that the Rambam understood this, that if it comes up every 70 years, where is it the rest of the time? You see. Okay, so that's strange. And that's it, right? Those are... Right? So why the question is a very good question. Why be cryptic about it? Don't know the answer, but I can say that it's not the only time that dyeing specifically with blue and purple was very cryptically told. There's a dyer's manual from the 14th century that gives a long explanation of how you dye everything. When it gets to Wode, which was a blue dye, Kalilan actually, gives one line, and you use Wode to dye blue, and that's it. No explanation, no... Until the Americans dyed indigo, there is no recipe that anybody ever put down on how exactly you dye indigo. So the only thing that we can think about is that these were very, very closely guarded secrets. Maybe that Chazal knew a little bit about, a lot about, the people who didn't know wanted to keep it very hush. The people who didn't know much, Pliny and Aristotle, also very, very vague basically the Gemara Menachot that talks about how you die chayav is almost word for word what Pliny and Aristotle say. You take a vat, you put into it snails, you put it on a low fire for a couple of days, and you add things to it. It doesn't help us much. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. So I don't know the answer of why it's cryptic, but I can say that generally dying with blue was cryptic. Remember one thing. In 383, an edict came out by Theodosius that anybody who wore tichelet or argamad was punishable by death. Okay, he was the emperor of Rome. Whether because the murex was sacred, as some have it, whether it was just very, very lucrative, so the Romans wanted to keep that profit to themselves. For whatever reason, it was extremely expensive, very, very rare, and dangerous to deal in tchelet. And so, the Gemara talks about the two who smuggled tchelet from... I'm saying it a lot clearer than the Gemara said. The two who came and brought something to Babel, and behind them, what was it? It's something that you make in loose, and what did that... It's tchelet, but the bottom line is, smuggling tchelet out of Eretz Yisrael to Babel was extremely dangerous, and the Gemara says the Nesher almost caught these. The Nesher is clearly the symbol for Rome, the Roman eagle. The Iraq the nation in school, and they were only saved by a great miracle. So it was dangerous, and people didn't deal with it, didn't want to deal with it, didn't talk about it. That's the best guess that I can get as to why the Gemara is so cryptic.
Yeah.
There was something, there was a claim that they did, but it's not true. Yigaya did found like a tied tuft of wool, but that was not.
Yes. How is it like putting it in the sun? I just don't know what that is. Is that like about the sun?
No, I'm sorry. So, again, you should read up more about that. There's so much to talk about, so it's hard to grab everything in, and I really want to focus on these ideas. But basically, the thing is like this. If you die with these snails, it's not easy to die with them. It's not easy to find a natural dye. It's not easy to find any dye. Because it's a tarte de satre, basically, a dye. See, because if you just take wine and spill it on your shirt, it may be red for a couple of minutes, but as soon as you pour water or soap on it, it'll wash out. That's not a dye. Okay, so you need something which is strong and lasting and stays attached to the fabric. Doesn't bind to water, doesn't bind to soap. Very few things don't bind to water and soap. So it's got to be extremely inert in order to not bind to water or soap. But if it's inert, it's not going to bind to the wool either. So how do you get something which will bind to the wool but won't bind to water or soap? And that's a very, very tricky thing to do. And usually you have to trick the dye into getting into the wool and then somehow or another get it back to a different state. And it stays in there. You trick it to get it in there. Now, once it's in there, it won't come out. And these types of dyes are called vat dyes. And the trick that you do is reducing them, whatever, putting a charge on them, not important. The bottom line is, in ancient times, they used bacteria to ferment it. In modern times, we use sodium dithionite, which is a reducing agent. But the bottom line is, during this one period during the dye process, when you have the dye in the state where it's soluble in water and can enter into the matrix of fabric, at that point, it's weakened to a certain extent. And if you shine ultraviolet light on it and expose it to the sun, the bromine atoms will break off and you're left with just an indigo molecule. The indigo molecule is the color of sky blue. You'll still find traces of dibromo and monobromo indigo in the fabric if you test it very, very carefully, not with a test like baking it in barley, but in a test like using HVAC. Okay, so you can find the presence of monobromo indigo and dibromo indigo, but the eye will only detect indigo after you've done that process. I don't know how clear that is, but I don't think I can make it clear other than showing it to you, which I'd love to do. But. Yeah. It can be either one, depending on how dark and light depends on what the concentration of dye is. So it is virtually the same color by the eye. Like the Gemara says, it's impossible to distinguish between Kala Iman and Tchelet. They look exactly the same. With an HPLC, you can tell the difference. But probably not, certainly not by Ah. Yeah.
Before when I was asking about the sources of the Tchelet, the actual snails. Your answer was concerning the process condition. The question was, if the snails were so commonly used to produce Tchelet and Argelin in the time of Chazal, then why, in describing the snails, I'm trying to tell you, how do you know you're looking at a snail which is used for Tchelet, so that it would be pretty, it would seem to be like a pretty commonly known snail?
Yeah, well, common is a difficult thing to say. I mean, if you live by the sea, you've probably seen these snails. If you're living in...
Right.
The Jews didn't particularly live close to the sea in the time of Chazal. They lived up the mountains. But even so, I don't know when this particular brisa was written. You know, the answer basically is I have no idea. I don't understand why the Gemara didn't just come out and say, it kind of looks like, I don't know how to describe it. It's got spines on it, it's got, you know, if you look at it from the front, it's got an oval shape, it's got a little ridge down the front of it. I don't know why it doesn't say that. But, don't know. Okay, so thank you everybody for staying up late. If there's anything else, I have some